Talofa, Bula, Malo. Welcome to Pacific Rugby Players Radio. All things Pacific Rugby, all things about us. A place where we take time to talk the big and small issues, share stories and have a few laughs with current and past Pacific Rugby players around the world. So whether on the team bus, driving home from training or on the physio table, sit back, chill and dig down deep on the issues that affect us. Pacific Rugby Players. Here's your host for today.
Mālo elele, talofa lava, bolovanaka, morena tātou, and welcome to PRP Podcast. It's a privilege here to be part of the Pacific Rugby Players team. My name is Aidan Clark, and today we have another outstanding educational workshop for you. Today we're focusing on another subject in terms of staying in rugby after you hang your boots up and becoming a team manager of a professional sports team. We're very privileged to have one of the very best in the game today with us, Darren Shand of the All Blacks, manager of one of the most successful sports teams across the globe for the last 16 years. Now, I'm really looking forward to this because I think this is possibly a pathway that players don't explore. First option is to think about coaching in terms of staying in rugby, and I think there's genuine opportunity for any player to follow in the footsteps of someone like Darren and other managers across the world and utilise their skills that they have learnt and experience in rugby in this new job. So, really looking forward to this chat. This is going to be Darren providing us with his experiences and challenges, and no doubt probably plenty of funny stories about the changing rooms in the back of the bus within the All Blacks. But in here is going to be lots of tips and tricks for you if team management career, whether you're currently in it or want to explore it. So sit back, listen, get your pen and paper out, and enjoy this chat here with Darren Shand, All Blacks manager.
Welcome everybody. I can see some familiar names who have been with our workshops the last few weeks, and also plenty of new names. My name's Aidan Clark, Chief Executive of Pacific Rugby Players. We've been delivering a series of education workshops for players and anyone across the globe who are interested in the personal development space during this time where we're mostly all at home, logging into Zoom meetings like this. Today, we're carrying on a series about staying in the game post-rugby career, and really, really fortunate to have one of the very best with us to talk about the topic of becoming a team manager and a team manager of a professional rugby team. So, Darren Shand, welcome, mate. Thanks for joining us.
No worries, Aidan. Good to be here, man. Thank you.
Just as a bit of an intro for any of you who have been in a cave and don't know about Darren, he, I calculate it actually, has been a top level manager for probably 22 years now, since 99, starting off with Canterbury, moving into the Crusaders for 4 years, where you guys were obviously very successful, and then joined the All Blacks in 2004. So 16 years in the seat, managing one of the highest performing sports teams across the globe, which is no mean feat. Mate, we're stoked to have you along. I'm sure you're going to be able to pass on plenty of tips and tricks for the team here. Even a little bit more about yourself and your pre-rugby days with your physical wear degree, I think it was, and even AJ Hackett Bungie, I believe. Thank you. I'll probably want to keep it pretty light to start off with. So how's isolation life treating you, mate? And what have you learned about yourself during isolation?
Morning, everyone. Morena tato. It's been an interesting few weeks. I guess on a work side, part of my role obviously is with the All Blacks, but the other part of it is working with the executive at New Zealand Rugby. So 95% of the time just been trying to stop the bleeding, really, and trying to keep the game alive back here. And so it's been, in a way, some of the stuff you're dealing with is it takes your breath away. And our CEO just says that every day it's kind of like you just got to bite down on the mouth guard and keep going. And that's what it's felt like at times. And you're dealing with people's livelihoods too, which is, it's a real sense of responsibility. So that's been one, and it's been good to have those challenges and keep busy. because not much happening on the rugby front. And as my kids are definitely sick of me. I don't think I've been home this long for 22 years. but really fortunate, we live. I live in Christchurch, and I live out near the beach, near Sumner, for those that know Christchurch, and pretty close to lots of hills and tracks on the beach. So sort of had a bit of freedom, even though we've been locked down. So it's been okay. I was just saying to Aidan before we started, you know, I'm pretty much an optimist, and don't like living in the half empty space too much. So kind of looked at it as an opportunity to do a whole lot of things, both in the work and the personal space that wouldn't have had, you know. And a lot of mates I'm talking to said, oh, we just can't stop eating, and, you know, mum's cooking too much, but I kind of can't keep the weight on. I'm just dropping like a fly. So it's been quite good. And yeah, it's been good just to live a different life and find a different schedule and a different way and get through it.
And staying home for a few bits. So no room service in the mornings, no beds getting made, and no buffet down in the kitchen.
Yeah, no, it's been certainly been a different life. But you know, one of the things I always do when I'm touring is like the housemates get a bit annoyed with me because I always make my bed. And what are you doing that for? It just kind of makes me feel normal, grounds me a bit, and always search out the hotel guest laundries, you know, because I just like do my own washing and little things like that to normalize a life that's not really normal, you know, when you're touring. So it's been good. I live in a house with girls too, so we. You know, I've got two daughters, so it's not really rugby. You know, they don't really give a stuff about rugby, so it's quite grounding in that sense, you know. More into TikTok and dancing.
Bit of balance. Yeah. Right, before we dive down into some of the technical things I want to talk about being a team manager, thought I'd keep it pretty light, kick it off. There'll be some people with some questions, no doubt, a little bit later we can fire through. But I've got some quick fire, probably five questions for you. Short and sharp, to get us rolling. So, number one, player who's always late.
Oh, actually, I want to share an example with you, not so much a player, but about another gentleman that had a pretty important leadership role with our team, Odd Dobberman. But it was 2015 World Cup. We just arrived in the UK. In the All Blacks, we have very few rules. Like we kind of have a high expectation base, but not too many rules. But the number one rule is be on time. And I guess the saying is always, if you're 5 minutes early, you're late. Yep. So we jumped into this meeting, just start of the World Cup. I think we had someone from World Rugby coming in to talk about anti-doping or something like that. And we're all there, seated down, and it was like 9 o'clock, and I said to the back seat, I think Kevi Mialamu was the man at that stage in charge. I said, oh, mate, we got to get going. You know, it's nine. This gentleman's ready to go. And he said, oh, yeah, but coach isn't here yet. And I said, oh, I don't care. It's nine. You know, we got to get started. So, you know, we started. Big Steve rolled in like 5 minutes past nine, and Kevi just got up, stopped the meeting, said, oh, excuse me, Darren, can I have a word? And he just got up and he gave it to Steve, just said, look, not good enough. You know, this team functions on everyone being on time, and I don't care who you are, you know, which was, to me, was a great example of what you need in a team, you know, at that level, is that everybody's prepared to challenge everybody. And like Steve always runs it close to the wire, you know. But this time he was five, then so he got it smacked. And
how did he take it?
His nickname was the last word, you know. but he didn't have any words to say, which was good. So he just sat down and ate his humble pie.
Nice.
Yeah, that's good.
Funniest player in the changing rooms?
Oh, I remember back, like probably in my early days at the Crusaders. We had these front rowers, I don't know if you remember, Greg Somerville, Greg Feek, and Mark Hammett. And they just had the funniest sort of laughs, you know, like the Gatling gun and machine gun. They after every game, you know, the front row just seemed to have their own little thing going on. They sit in the corner and have a good laugh. There are lots of memories of funny people, you know. Norm Maxwell probably be one of the funniest men I've ever met in my life. Just a crazy nutter, played like that, and just lived life like that too, you know. But then had a real deep sort of spirituality about him too, which was pretty special, you know. Really cared for people. I don't know. Over 17, 18 years, there's been lots of funny guys.
And lots of personalities, I bet.
It's really funny. I was thinking about it this morning. I was thinking about someone like Andrew Mertens in my early times who, and when I first started, we had that, we were just between professional and amateur. And so the move to professional rugby was quite a big shift in terms of responsibilities and what you needed to do. And like Mertz was a superstar, you know, he was a man at that stage, and lots of media attention and lots of requests off the field. And he hated all that. He just got up as goat, and he was a real up and down personality. And fast forward, after he retired, we're at the World Cup in 07, and we're playing a game in Marseille, and I was just standing at the tunnel door, or by the change room door, looking down the corridor, and all the screens were there for all the TVs, you know, to do the interviews and stuff. And here's Mertz standing there in a suit, you know, with a microphone, and we just looked at each other. It was just like this moment of, wow, you know, look who you've come to. You know, you've gone to the dark side now, and but it was quite ironic, really, but where we end up, you know.
Nice. And I'll combine my last two together a little bit. Player requests. Any bizarre player requests, and or maybe what's the common one you get from everybody in the All Blacks?
Tickets. Yeah.
And tickets.
Tickets is the currency for the, you know, the man. Oh, bro, you got anything left, you know? Like it's Friday, a couple of hours before the game, or that's the standard. Interesting one for me is always with SB Dub.
Yep.
So because he's obviously Muslim and, you know, has some sort of beliefs that are different from others, Coda, who's his agent, I often get a phone call every now and he goes, oh, Shandy, could you get some money out for Sonny? Because he's running out of cash, and I'll fix you up when I get over there. So, because Sonny won't go to the bank because they only get money from Muslim banks. So, so I quite often have to shell out from my accountant. Makes interesting accounting. The chief executive often question, what's that money there for? I know, we'll get it back from Coda, you know. And Coda lives by, he lives by tickets too. That's his currency. So I'd shelled out some money for Sonny 1 week, and Coda rocked into the hotel. And if you've ever met Coda, he's quite direct. And he rocked into me and he said, where's my tickets? And I was like, yeah, but where's my cash? So a couple of brown envelopes changed hands. We're at a London hotel, but it's all good.
Nice. Mate, if we wind the clock back, which is a fair way before you sort of got into this stuff, and there's players out there across the world and plenty of others who are thinking, you know, so how do you get into this pathway and how do you get into this career? Is there, when did you first decide that this is something you want to pursue, and why team manager?
Yeah, I've been reflecting on that a bit because I certainly don't think my pathway would be a pathway that the people that have been involved in rugby would follow. Because I'm just really fortunate in a lot of ways. You know, I did some uni stuff and I spent a long time in Queenstown working in the outdoors and whitewater rafting. I taught skiing for a long time and ended up working for AJ Hack at Bungie. And I look back at the skills that I learned in that time and, you know, I'll give you an example. In whitewater rafting, you know, some days I'd have 8 Japanese on my boat. We're going down the Shotover River in Queenstown. It's in flood. Maybe I've capsized the raft, not on purpose, but because the rapids are really big and I've got 8 people that don't speak English and they could die, you know? And so I don't want to make it over dramatic, but we had deaths in the time I was working there. And it's life and death, you know, at times. And you've, in terms of crisis management, you learn a lot. I was young, you know, I was in my 20s and it was just a bit of fun really, but the more I did it, the more I realised the responsibility we had every day on the river to look after these people who had paid a huge amount of money. And, you know, it wasn't just a game; it was life. It was real. Yeah. And I don't know. Just at that time, I remember going through some, you know, pretty tough days on the river. And I always seemed to find that when it got really bad, I just went calm. You know, I just sort of thought, what do I do next? What do I do next? What do I do next? And I think when I went to rugby, like, you know, a player getting in trouble didn't seem like that bad, you know. It was like, oh, he's just stuffed up, you know. Like, he's just at the police station. I'll just get him out and take him home, you know. And if that's what it was. But and so I think that was a really good grounding for me, just to see that. And so I really went in. I always loved sport, and I just got to the end of it in Queenstown where I couldn't really see much path. And I was getting into my 30s and just I really want, and I just saw an opportunity in rugby. I was actually in a marketing role, and
okay.
the last job I had in Queensland with AJ Hackett was in marketing. So I started with Canterbury Rugby as a sponsorship manager. So my role was primarily looking after some of our smaller sponsors. And the in with the team was that I was looking after the outfitting, for example. I was running some of the promotional activity the players were doing. And literally just out of the blue, Robbie Deans and Steve Hansen, who are coaching the Canterbury team, said, "How'd you like to be the manager?" I said, "Well, I've never managed a rugby team before. I've never managed any team, to be honest. Never played the game, so I don't know what you see in me, but I'll give it a crack."
Single sword.
Literally, that's what it was. I remember the first training, I was like so scared, I didn't know what to do. Or Tamari will probably remember, we had a guy called Poss, who was our sort of baggage man and massage man, and he sort of took me under his wing. And that was the start of it, I guess. And just sort of found my own path in that sense. So,
and that's very common within rugby scenes, is you entered there through the marketing door, but show some skill set, show some value, people identify it, and you never know where it might lead you, right?
Yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of people ask me how, and I look at people that are involved in the game, you're in a much better state to do it because you've lived it and you've seen it and you understand it, and then it's just bringing who you are to that, because while there's a whole lot of things that you need to know, and interesting, at New Zealand now, in the last couple of years, we spend a lot of time and energy developing our coaches and our S&C coaches and that sort of thing, but we've done nothing for the managers. And literally, it's not just a guy now who turns up and grabs the beer and the jerseys and hands them out. You know, it's a lot more. It's the bandwidth of a manager now is really, really wide. It's actually a leadership role. It's not about managing, it's about leading. And so I'm trying to work quite closely, a group of us, build almost an educative skill set model, a framework, if you like, for managers, and to understand that all the skill sets that you need, and most of those can be learned. You know, the most important thing is actually understanding who you are and how you are and how you're going to lead, because that's what matters the most. All the other things can be learned and picked up, and if you've been in the environment, you're probably aware of most of those things anyway. So
That's a great segue into my next question, actually. And obviously, we have lots of players online who have come on here because they're interested in this. And you know rugby players really well in your time. So we, in the last probably 2 years, we've been thinking in this space a lot. Often when myself or one of the rest of the Pacific Rugby Players team would sit down with a player, there's always a desire to stay in the game, and first port of call is always coaching. But we know there's very limited roles in that to be paid to be a coach. And team manager has been one that we want to explore a lot more. What sort of transferable skills do you think of that are sitting rugby players now that could be easily adopted to be a good team manager?
That's an interesting question. I think one is, you understand the culture of rugby and the way it is. And so I think that's important. So you understand what team means, you understand what me and we over me means. And so I think that's really critical. If you've played a long time and you've led, you understand how to lead. You understand how to lead on the field. And hopefully, as a player, you've learned to lead off the field, because primarily that's what a manager does, is lead off the field and leads everything off the field, really. So I think that's really transferable. But I think the biggest thing you have to learn when you go from player to management is that you sit in a different seat.
Yeah.
And one of the toughest things in leadership is courage. You know, courage to lead, courage to challenge, courage to have tough conversations. As a manager, some days you're putting your arm around guys, and the other days you're smacking them. You know, and for me, That's always challenging, because I'm not an in-your-face leader. That's not my style. I like to lead from behind, and I like to lead by coaching. I like to lead by encouraging. I like to lead by mentoring. I like to lead by the example I set. And so there's lots of ways to lead. You don't have to be I think we get caught up on leadership sometimes, looking at it the wrong way and think it's the guy that says the most, but sometimes the guy that says the least.
Yeah,
sure. All those things really help, you know, just having that experience in the team and feeling that energy in the team, feeling the responsibility for the team doing well, you know, in the role that you carry.
And obviously understanding the energy as a rugby player helps, because I'm presuming you'd know when to push and pull on the players, when to really keep them honest, and also when to wheel it back, because you've been there, you've been in that seat, and you know what they're feeling.
Yeah, that's right. And as I say, you put yourself in, at times you feel like you've got to play bad cop, and that's what the team needs. As long as you come from that team perspective all the time, it's relatively, you know, it's relatively straightforward. It makes your decision making easy. And I think the big thing is you're never on your own. You know, the longer we've gone in the All Blacks, the more people we've put around the sort of senior group to help us lead, you know, so that we've got a few minds working together versus one, and we get tight as a team of leaders and within the management, and we can lead with more courage, and we can lead with more support, you know, because it's not a job we need to stand on your own either. So,
I'd be interested to get your opinion. It's a theory that I've had for a while around the opportunity, especially for Pacific Island players to pursue this career. Now, even in your teams in Super Rugby in New Zealand, we're upwards towards 60% Pacific Island players. In Australia, it's over 50. And even if I was to think abroad, the top 14 final in France last year had about 35% Pacific Island players on the field. Now, if you had a cultural understanding, able to communicate, connect and understand in those positions, in my opinion, surely that would be of value to a high performance team in a team management role. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm totally with you on that. I think people get a bit scared of, you know, of the, I think it's been positioned poorly, you know, in the past, and, you know, it's sort of just someone to come in and do the logistics, but that's just one part of it. And I think if you look at it as a leadership role, it's a much more of a challenge, and it's much more than just that. And you're not the dog's body. You build the people around you to support and carry the load and share the load with you. It's hugely rewarding, you know, and I feel privileged every week to go and sit on the seat beside the boys on the bench, and that's the best part of it, you know, and to sort of still be able to share and feel part of the vibe and still influence people, still make a difference. And people ask about, you know, what are your best memories, and naturally you think you'd go to the victories, but I look more at the people, you know, and I look at say Kevin Mialamu and what the human being that he's become, you know, I'm so proud of him, you know. I look at Ma and, you know, came from all sorts of trouble. And then one of my best memories of Ma, we were sitting in this airport in Germany one day. We'd just been at Adidas, and I've been trying to convince him that he had a real opportunity as Ma, the person to make a name for himself in that commercial space, if he could just sort of play the game a bit, you know. We'd gone up to Germany, and they'd talked to him about building a boot around him and all that. And we were just sitting there over a burger, and he just said to me, "Oh, bro, I get it," you know. And to me, that was just like, it was just that growth in him to see that. So that, I think those things become really, you know, important for you, just to see. I look at Nuggie, you know, Aaron Smith, and the crap he's gone through, and, you know, all his own making, but again, he's becoming a better human being. Millsy, Molina,
yep.
So, you know, there's so many examples where rugby can change you, and to me, that's what the big buzz for me is.
Oh, it must be hugely rewarding, because you will know all the detail behind the scenes and seeing the growth and the young men becoming, you know, really good leaders in the community, and some of the names you just mentioned being huge transformations by the boys. Just to pivot a little bit, and I've got a couple of questions that I can see the questions coming from the group here, and they're sort of encompassed in these, to focus more on the skills. So you came from a marketing, you just said that you were thrown in the deep end a little bit by Robbie, and then knowing what you, to bring it forward about 20 years, what sort of skill areas do you think are critical if someone was thinking about where shall I sharpen up, if this is something I want to do, just off the bat, where would they look?
There's obviously a big planning element to being a manager, and that can go very micro and it can be very macro. So, but where I sit now in terms of the planning, I'm kind of at the wide part. I'm not dealing with the narrow part because I'm really fortunate to have a, you know, big group of staff to help with that now. But so I think that's a real key element to it. And so in terms of working with a coach, to me, that's, I sort of see the role as pulling the whole campaign together with him so that you're balancing the rugby needs with all the other needs in the professional game. Because it's not just about training anymore. It's about commercial. It's about media. It's about fans. And so you've just got to get all those balances right. And that's really, that sits pretty importantly with the manager, that you, in terms of getting the campaign right, you get, you address all those things because they all matter. So that's a big part of it. There's obviously a financial element that you need to understand. And that's critical. I think increasingly there's a legal, need to understand the legal aspects of the game and policy and collective and all those things. A lot of the work we do when we travel, we're working with contracts with other unions at World Cups, you're dealing with participation agreements, all that sort of thing. You don't need to be a lawyer, but you just, again, need to have a broad knowledge of that sort of area. Obviously, there's a logistical understanding that you need to have, and efficient ways of doing things. And because in the end, and one thing, there's a balance that you've always got to find as a manager, is there's a lot of tasks to be done. There's a lot of boxes to be ticked. But on the other side, you've also got to be a relationship person. And so it's just getting that balance. Ian Foster said to me about 5 or 6 years ago, he said, we talk a lot, and he goes, but we always end up talking about tasks. So you and I just got to talk about relationships a bit more. And so for me, it was quite a nice way to think about the role, is that it's that balance between both of those two forces. So I think, yeah, those are some of the more sort of technical sort of components to the role. Increasingly, one of the areas that I've had to learn a lot is around security. Global security. So we go into countries now where terrorism's and the new enemy, and along with viruses. But I've had to understand that, and you know, there's not a country that we tour as a team now where we don't have a security briefing, and so I've had to done a risk assessment and understand things. And we're just, it's not about alarming people; it's just arming people with skills, you know, to deal with. I asked myself one day, if there was a terrorist attack in London, and we were there, and we were involved, what were we doing? We didn't have a plan, and.
Sure.
So, well, we need a plan, you know. So that's been another area of more recent times that we've had to upskill ourselves in and learn about.
Yeah, nice. Before I ask you a little bit more around what a high-level plan for an All Black test week looks like, I'm interested in jumping down that rabbit hole where you mentioned tasks. So how does Darren Shan plan his week or the team's week? What sort of tools people use, platforms, WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger, what's happening in the All Blacks around Google Calendar, Slack, all those sorts of things. I'm sure even just a base goal, maybe you're still running it on spreadsheet. I'm sure everybody's pretty keen to know what sort of actual practical tools you use to keep organised and not let anything slip through the cracks.
Yeah. Well, what first started back in my early days at Canterbury was basically a checklist, you know, and eventually got to about 35 pages on a Word document and just got really unwieldy. Too hard to manage. And I've been working with a lady at New Zealand Rugby for a long time in my team, Bianca, and she found this tool called Smart Sheets, which is basically, I guess it's like an Excel spreadsheet, but it lives in the cloud. And so we built this checklist, basically, which it's a wonderful tool because it's a planning tool. It's a checklist in a week when you're there, but it's also an archive tool, so you can record, so you can go back if you're going to that venue again and see what you did. And
fantastic.
What it's done is it's dropped my email traffic by about 100% because it's live. All our various, and the smart sheet set up with various areas, you know, hotel, travel, match venue, host union, those sorts of things. And so those people have access to it. And so they're providing me the information, or providing us the information, and so we're not having to have emails that have on top of email on top of email. We just got this voting document. And it's been a life changer. Honestly, it's made a huge difference to us. And the other major tool is we partnered with an American company called Teamworks, who run an app. And quite a cool story. Actually, a guy played American football. He was in a team, and he said, "I always bloody disorganized," so he wrote an app to help the team. And so we jumped on board with them, and they've been awesome in allowing us to sort of create some things that we felt were important, and that was very much geared for college sport in America, but we've now sort of got it to where international teams can use it. I think Liverpool's now using it.
Okay.
Bianca just went to a conference earlier in the year with, you know, a number of sports from around the world, and we're all throwing our ideas into it. So it's again just a calendaring tool, but there's quite a bit more power to it than that. So we just get it really simple, try to make technology work, and you know, I guess the players love, you know, we've become paperless. So, yeah.
So the players utilize both those platforms as well, in terms of even just messaging, saying meet you down in the lobby in 10.
Teamworks they use, yeah, they totally live on Teamworks. So, for example, if and we can personalise their calendars, so every player only sees in his calendar what he needs to see.
Okay.
But I know a lot of coaches don't like clutter, so they don't want everyone's calendar with everything in it. So the player only sees what he needs to see. And you know, for example, if he's got a commercial, an activity to do, he just clicks on the day, on the activity, it brings up all the information about that event, what he needs to wear. Might be a picture of where he needs to be, there'd be a map of where he needs to go. Phone, he can ring the person that's running it directly through the appointment and all sorts of things. So it's a really good tool, and we just keep developing it for our own needs. And you know, and we've got it working internationally with time zones and all those sorts of things. So yes, yeah, cool.
Fantastic. This is a tough one because I know there's so much detail that goes on, but I'm sure people would be interested to know sort of how the loading of the week happens for you in terms of the key points. So if we were to say test match Saturday night, Sunday morning, what does that look like? And then just run us through some detail of what's important for you during that week.
Hello, I think one of the things that I've always lived by is that when I get to a test week, probably 95% of the work's done. And that's why those tools are really good. So I really want to be almost free, so that I can deal with whatever, because things, and what do we say, the game never follows the game plan, you know, so things are always going to pop up, and so you just want to have that freedom to do that. So if I run you through Sunday through Saturday, Sunday's generally when we sort of, we have a group in the All Blacks, it used to be called the Sweet Spot, but it's now called the Planning Crew, which is myself, head coach, Gilbert Inoka, because Gilbert and I are co-managers, John Plumtree, who's now our assistant coach, and Nick Gill, who's our head of sort of athlete and high performance. So we generally always get together Sunday just to make sure we're all on the same page, about what are the challenges ahead, and we just do it over a glass of wine. Normally it doesn't have much of an agenda, but it's just that connection for the four or five of us to connect and get the week sorted. And generally we'll meet with our players leaders group on that Sunday just to frame things up. And so that's kind of my focus there. You know, I've got five in my operations team. So the Sunday is normally a travel day, and I just go for the ride now, really. They've got it nailed. The sort of Monday, Tuesday, they're just big days for the team. And for me, it's just making sure that from a rugby perspective, things are clear enough that they can do the job. And so there's not much in terms of off-field stuff. I generally try and get the tickets sorted Monday, Tuesday of the week so it doesn't become a burden later in the week. And like I know for a lot of players, they get the family pressure. So I just said, look, in All Blacks, it's all done by Tuesday. So you can tell everybody after that, forget it, because I don't want you distracted, you know. You just want to be able to deal with what you need to deal with. And we get that. Now, Wednesday, we normally have the day off. And so I normally try and catch up, spend quite a bit of time talking about the following week on a Wednesday with various people, just so we're all clear. As I get to sort of Thursday, we have quite a big Friday off field with commercial stuff, so just making sure that's all ready to go. Thursday's a pretty big training day, so again, it's just for me, it's making sure that all the distractions are minimized for coaching. We're pretty fortunate at home on a Thursday, we normally play at train at the match venue. So the negotiations behind the scene with groundsmen, and that's normally quite full on, you know, they're so protective of their pitches. So it's just making sure all that's in place. Yeah, Friday, as I say, just make sure that we put our players out commercially on a Friday morning, because we feel it's great for our sponsors. It's close to the match. Gets them out and about a little bit on a Friday when not much else is happening. It makes the players sort of think about what's coming up and who they represent. So I think that's a cool sign, and obviously have a captain's run. And on Saturday, normally my family normally come to most games, so it's kind of enjoy that time. And I just enjoy Saturday. I don't really feel the pressure around the match. I just kind of look forward to it. And obviously that, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 minute journey in the bus is a bit of a, you know, everyone's looking at you and making sure that works, particularly your coaches. But other than that, you know, if you've done the work on that and you know it, then you just got to roll with the punches with that. And it's just about building, you know, like our group actually now, we're quite happy to stay like an hour away from a match venue if that means our whole week's going to be easier around training and all that. And just get on match day, we're going to go for an hour. And as long as we've set the expectation, everyone just gets on with it, and we create a way of dealing with that. So I think really making sure the Monday to Friday hums and that we spend not much time on the bus is more critical than living right close to the match venue for us, you know. So and those are just things we've learned over time that makes our group tick, and our group need to be somewhere where they can be social, where they can get out, where they can escape the bubble. And you know, life as an All Black is a bit like living in a fishbowl at times, and so having that freedom to be yourself during the week is important. Juggling all that, yeah.
I think that's fantastic. Thanks. So I think that's really valuable probably for everybody listening in and picking some tips out of that. I'm interested about and some questions that have come in around team dynamics. So when you first came into, say, the Canterbury scene, you quite rightly said you weren't a rugby man, and you would have walked in some pretty strong personalities, Mertz and Justin Marshall and those sorts of guys. And in the All Blacks, there's been some players with, you know, massive mana that are probably running the cutter in the changing rooms. How do you deal with that? If you're a young manager, a new manager coming into a team environment, you've got strong personalities, which is probably really common, but you've got a job to do as manager. What are the skills that you use there?
Oh, yes, yeah, it's interesting. I think, you know, I look at this because there's probably been two periods for me in terms of that. You know, when I first started, you're right, I was green as grass and I had nothing really. So I just had to be myself. And for me, in the early stage, it was just work ethic that got me through. I think that's where I earned the respect, was I worked hard and I worked for others. I didn't work for myself. And so that was a real key thing. I think in the All Blacks early on, I had a few runs on the board in terms of I've been in a successful environment. I'd seen off, in terms of getting this role, the other two candidates, because I wasn't sure to even put my hand up for this role because I wasn't an All Black.
Yeah.
At the time when the role was advertised, it was actually for a general manager. And so names like Sean Fitzpatrick, Andy Haidt and Andy Dalton were mentioned, and Darren Hoog. You know? So you know, to get the role was amazing. But Graham Henry was awesome. And like he just said to me, he says, I just want to coach. I just want you to sort out all the other stuff. It was really easy.
Just all the other stuff.
And so it was really good to have that, and I really enjoyed working with Graham because he just told you straight, and it was easy. You know, there was no grey. It was just black and white with Ted.
Yep.
And I think what I've been really lucky with is always been lots of other really good people around that lead. You know, and I've been with Gilbert the whole time. I've been with Steve Hansen the whole time. Had Smithy for ages, and they're all. They all care so much, you know, and so I never felt alone. And so I think, I couldn't go now. And people say, oh, you could go and work at any club. I couldn't do that because I'd need to go with a group of people, because that's when you can really make change. It's not just about one person.
100%.
And so and coming back to your question, what I've learned is that I talked a bit about good cop, bad cop, and I look at players that I've been with in the past, and I think you, through how you are and how you lead and how you relate to them, and there's always moments that you have with players that matter. And I look at, if I take Marshy, for example, I'm sure everyone's got different opinions of Marshy, but I remember once at Canterbury, he opened a bar, I think it was called the Grumpy Mole, and it might have been in conflict with one of our sponsors or something, but and he did something for the players that our marketing manager didn't agree with, and but I went to bat for him,
because
I felt he was right, and so that paid dividends for me later, because, you know, he actually mentioned it, at Canterbury we used to, after a game, everyone had to say something, and he just got up once and just said, oh, thanks for backing me, Shandy, you know, and that was all that needed to be said, you know, it was that moment, and I nailed it. So I think those things matter when you work in this role, and as I said, you know, at times you've got to have the courage to bring someone into line and bring them back to the level of expectation that you need, and other times you need to be there for them when things aren't going so well, and it's, I think the more you do it, you know, I came in with zero experience for that, whereas you guys have all seen all that because you've lived it, and so in a way you've got to find your way with that.
But I guess what I'm hearing is you build up that mutual respect, and that's done as long as all players have enough emotional maturity to know when you're a good guy, that you've been honest and upfront, and like you said, that you've got their back, and that goes a long way.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, you got to have a bit of a thick skin here, you know. You know, you got to take it, and you got to give it, and you got to be able to laugh at yourself, you know. And life's not, you know, rugby's not life, is it? You know,
it's just, exactly,
just rugby.
On culture, so I just had a question there from Darren. It looks like he's chiming in from Kenya. A good question. So you would have seen some good and bad team cultures in their past, but on a practical level, at a start of a campaign, there's often team building. If you've got a short period, you're trying to build the culture of the team. Now, once upon a time, you would have just locked the door with a few kegs in the middle, and that does the trick. But these days, whether you're carrying logs through rivers or some of the really probably high-level stuff that the All Blacks are doing these days, like, what would you recommend? What are the key elements that any activity should have in it? And even just some examples of what's been good and what's bad.
Yeah, we haven't really gone down the activity path. I think what we've built in the All Blacks over, you know, the last couple of decades has really been about a culture of expectation. We've really tried to, if you come into the All Blacks, it's not an environment where we're trying to catch people out. Build an environment where there's a level of expectation that everyone is expected to rise to. And that's built on a whole lot of things. It's built on legacy, you know. It's built on understanding what 125 years of success means. What does this jersey stand for? What does it mean? What's unique about you as a Kiwi? What are the truly the values of being an All Black? We did an exercise about 6-7 years ago where we asked our players, you know, who were the great All Blacks who inspired you in the past? And that was the first question. And the second question was, what about those people inspired you? And so we end up with all these words, and we distilled those words down into 5 words. And that's really become, we talk about our house, you know, our meeting house, our whare, and those 5 words are now the po, you know, the pillars that hold our meeting house up. And so that's, when we have people come into our environment, they've got to understand about the acronym for the 5 words is DFC. And so everyone that comes in has got to understand what that is and how to live as an All Black. We use those po to represent how we are and how we live, and that's the All Blacks way, and we don't change that, because that's the core of our, you know, it's like the onion, you know, that's the center of the onion, and we keep peeling the layers back, and we come back to the core. What does it mean to be an All Black? And that's the essence of it. And in the end, if you've got that, if you've got core values in a way, then that'll drive the culture.
Great. And just to challenge that, so quite, there's probably people online thinking, oh, that's very well for the All Blacks. You've got that history, you've got that mana and the success. You're the Chicago Bulls of rugby, but what if do you think that you can apply that same ethos and those same techniques to even lower level teams to create that? Because what I'm hearing is driving culture through values and learning your history and things. And do you think you can apply that anywhere?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, because you know, I look at other sports that have become really heavily rules based, and you live in a culture of fear. You know, you want an environment that people want to come to every day and enjoy. And that it's just the place is so damn good they just don't want to leave it. And so I think you can do that you can do that in a business, you can do that in a sports team, you can do it anywhere. And what I like is when you build expectation, it's a much more fun place to be than, oh, what if I stuff up, you know. If you talk about words, and I think as a leader words really matter. You know, if I said to you all now, you know, I've watched you play, I'm going to give you some feedback. It's not really positive, is it? It's like, oh, he's going to crush me, you know. I dropped the ball twice and I didn't run a good line here and whatever. But if I said to you, if I use the notion of feeding forward about what I want to see, it's much more positive. I take that myself. Like, I taught skiing for a long time and I came to skiing really late. And as a ski instructor, you have to go through all these exams. And I've always lacked the confidence in my own ability, and so every day I'm turning up to ski and I'm going out with these examiners trying to pass these exams, and they're telling me everything's wrong, you know. And then I started to believe them, and I walked away from it, you know, and I walked away on the precipice of getting my international badge, and I was so angry, you know. I just didn't have the courage to keep going with it, and I couldn't cope with that stuff anyway. 10 years ago I caught up with a guy that I used to ski with, and he just sort of found the passion for me again. And he's a coach. He coaches international ski races around the world, and including the New Zealand men's team. And I was going to Europe quite often for work, and I'd just go and spend some time with him, just started skiing, and I just found the love of it again. And he started videoing me skiing, and like 3 years later, we're back in Queenstown skiing, and at the bottom of the hill, we spotted these examiners that had coached me all the way through. And so I put the goggles on and the helmet and raced on down the hill with him, and pulled up beside them, and they said to me, "Oh, g'day." And they didn't sort of know who I was standing beside them. And one of the examiners said, "Oh, who's that young ski racer beside you?" I probably goes, "That's me," you know. And they're like, "Oh, what are you doing?" But it was just, his whole style was just feeding forward to me all the time. He says, "Right, try this. That's great. Now try this. Try that." And it was just, I learned so much about just language and how you treat people and how you coach people. Such a difference, you know. And so I think an environment, if you have that sort of attitude of trying to inspire and help people move, and we all have potential, you know, and it's just finding that what's the bit that's going to help you move. And I know even in a leadership space, under previous management with Steve and Gilbert, myself and Ian, every probably 2 months we would just get in a room and basically ask ourselves, how are we going? You know, what are you seeing and how I lead? And very courageous conversations. But you'd walk out of there fortified, because a lot of what you'd been doing had been supported by them. And then there'd been another couple of ways that they'd helped you think about how you can lead better. And so I think you can apply those principles anywhere. Yes, you're right. The All Blacks do have a whole lot of things that are helpful for us in setting that. But I think you can do it in any business or any sports team. It's about finding those points that are going to be the key to, you know, pulling that culture and taking it to a place that it's going to be effective.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Darren, look, you've had some really high times for your Blacks, but also, you know, you've won World Cups, but you've also lost World Cups. Well, not quite got to where you want to anyway, and had some disappointment. Now, you've got a big team around you. So you're probably not as isolated as some could be, but team managers, similar to a coach sometimes, could be a fairly isolated role, especially during the tough times. Have you got, for you, how do you deal with a stressful situation or pulling yourself up off the floor and moving forward?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I'm trying to think of, you know, probably the worst two times have been those, you know, World Cups in 07 and quarterfinal in Wales, and probably last year in Japan. And yeah, I think It's like anything. It's a bit even just like what we're going through at the moment with, you know, telling a whole lot of people that work at New Zealand Rugby they're not going to work here anymore. You know, there's a period where people are going to grieve and be angry and go through all of that, and you've got to cope with that. But it's what I've learned probably in both of those times is you've just got to pull everyone together, and you just got to spew all that rubbish out. You just got to get it out, and it's got to be heard. You just got to let people hurt, and you got to listen to it as hard as it is, because it is about movement again. And you know, if I look, you know, in Japan, probably the proudest moment for me was actually the way we responded to the loss, you know. And an even prouder moment was telling the guys after that last game, because we had the we played Friday night against Wales, and then we weren't due to fly up till Monday. And I was like, oh, great, you know, 3 days, 3 days of mad Mondays, you know. And I said to the players, we'd stayed in this one place for 3 or 4 weeks. And Peter, I think you should say something tonight, because, you know, it's not often that I get you to speak. And I said to them, boys, like I said, if we were leaving the hotel tomorrow on Saturday, I guarantee you the staff here, they'd all be out the front and they'd all be bowing to you because they've really enjoyed having you here. And I said, our challenge now is in the next 3 days that when we leave on Tuesday morning, that the same thing happens. And that'll mark down how good we have been at dealing with, you know, what's been put in front of us. So, and then that's ultimately what happened. And so that was
it's huge. And how do you facilitate, you talked about letting that negative energy out and getting people a chance to spew it all out, as you said. For any team manager, you're in an All Black environment, you've lost, I don't know, maybe Norse have lost another game in club rugby in Wellington. What do you provide for the players to get, have that outlet? What would you recommend?
Okay, I guess with us, it starts with the leaders, you know, so be it the players or the staff. So just creating a forum, a safe forum that we can sit down and just talk it, you know, just be able to have that brutal honesty. And certainly Steve's always led that. He was really good at that. And you're just allowing people to say what they think. And so I think that it's as simple as it is. That's what we did. You know, we just let people come in and grieve and talk about it. Because we knew we had to do that for 24 hours and get it out. And then once we'd done it with that smaller group, then we could use that group to help the other group.
Yeah.
Because they've got themselves a little bit further ahead. And, you know, whether you like it or not, when you lead, you've got a responsibility. And so you've got to bring the rest of the group with you. And that's your role, like whether you're the manager or the captain or part of the leadership group, that's your responsibility. You carry that off the field, and you carry it on the field too. So you just got to get up and show the courage and get on with it, because the expectation's there the next week too, isn't it? You know, it doesn't stop. So
I guess that's hinting at there's some questions come around the role of the manager within a team in terms of performances. What I'm hearing there is essentially often it's leadership, whether it's leadership to show, get off the floor and we go again next week, but also to lead by example. Would you think that's pretty spot on?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what I say. Like, you know, leadership's about how and who you are versus what your title is or what you perceive, you know, your skills are. It's how you are every day. That's whether you like it or not, people judge you and on how you are. So that's something you got to, you know, keep thinking about. And like, I've always had some fundamentals that I've stuck to the whole time in my career. And I've never been a drinker. You know, I've always felt that the responsibility, when things go wrong, I'm the first person they're going to come to. So
yeah,
I've got to be the person ready to go. And so I think, you know, having some of those core sort of principles around your job become, you know, really important. And but I kind of more the flat line in terms of my emotional levels, try and keep it like steady, you know, whereas I know a coach is going to be up and down based around results in the game. And so again, that's always been a fundamental. Can I be that person that people can always look to when the heat's on, that they just know that, you know, I might be, it's a duck, hey, you know, like you're calm on top of the water, but the feet are going like 100 miles an hour underneath that time, because you've got a lot going on in your head. But if you can present in that way, it's amazing. Even if you are feeling like you're, you know, running at a like road runner running really fast, but you're still there's still this essence of calm about you. And it's like what was that t-shirt they made about Puri Wipu and Tua Living? Just relax, I've got it in hand, you know, something like that.
And I guess there's a lot of that going on in the world, rugby world at the moment, because it's fairly uncertain times. I'm really interested to get your professional opinion around a subject that we talk a lot about, especially at the moment at Pacific Rugby Players, is around transition out of the game. Now, you've had some long-standing relationships with many players, where you no doubt would have had chats and people ask your opinion about things. At the moment, we're in a rugby world where some players have played their last game and didn't even know, and are now looking to return home and are looking at different options. What have you seen and what have you heard like about people who have done well, past players that you know have kicked on really well and there's past players who've gone through some dark times? Do you have anything to share in that space?
I think it's like anything in life, and I'm still learning myself, because I've made some mistakes through this period too, you know, in terms of the long term. I got a bit complacent with it, and now fighting to, you know, in terms of my family life, to really make it work, you know. So I think if you got a plan, you know, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. And so you have an amazing opportunity in rugby, in the professional game. There's so many opportunities. I know one area where we've made a bit of growth is some of the off-field activity that players actually really believing and seeing that now as an opportunity. How many of our players end up in media roles? Heaps of them, just by showing a bit of talent, you know, and just natural talent. How many players end up transitioning into other roles in the game because of what they've seen and where they think they can add, be it coaching, management, strength, conditioning, or whatever. And so it's just giving it, you've got to give it some time. Every opportunity has to be looked at. Because they're all there, and you've got a captive audience when you sit in these seats now. People want to talk to you, you know. You don't have to. You've just got that opportunity, and I feel that now. If I know when I come to places that just because of what I've been involved with, that's an opportunity because it opens a door to people. And so, the big things are one is got to. You really have to keep thinking ahead because this time's just showing that it can end like that. And that, you know, around every corner there's an opportunity. You just got to keep grasping them. And I think I always had this analogy. It probably doesn't work so much now, but in the early days, you know, if you go to a function, you know, you should come away with at least two business cards, or you should have met two more people because you don't know those opportunities what they'll lead to at some stage. So I know now, as I wouldn't say I'm winding down, but I'm thinking what's next. And about 2 years ago I just went out to the market and just started talking to people, and it just blew me away what I could do, you know. I didn't realize the skills that I'd picked up, and so I went to just a couple of recruitment agencies, and they weren't even in sport. And next thing, I was talking to a guy who owned an engineering company about running his business, and I would never even consider that. Arsenal Football Club got hold of me just out of the blue, you know, and I was like, I've never even, you know, I don't even like football, but but it was just amazing to think, you know, you do actually, you learn a lot in this game, and a lot of it's really transferable to a lot of things. I talk to a lot of businesses, and it blows me away how complicated things are for them. And when they start talking, I tell them things or share ideas with them that we do, and they're like, it's like you've given them, you know, greatest gift ever, and it was such a simple thing. So
I guess you've earned that right though, and the same with the players. You have a very limited time in the spotlight, which has been earned by yourselves. All the hard work for players, 6 o'clock on a rowing machine and the late night trainings and things like that has meant they're at a platform where they can open up the opportunity, and utilising that to think about next careers is the key. It's just what I'm hearing you're saying is you just have to keep learning and plan for that. On the learning front, so Like, this has been fantastic. No doubt people are here just being inspired. On a practical level, do you know of, and I think you may have hinted it earlier because you're developing something yourself, any sort of personal development options, courses? I'm hoping people here are probably going to go away and watch so many YouTube clips on Smartsheets and Teamworks. But what else is there out there?
In my latter years, I've learned the most from a lot of business stuff has been really valuable for us. If you're interested in reading any business book, there's a guy, Jim Collins, who wrote Good to Great, and he's written a number of books, and they're really easy to read. And just some of the principles and ideas around leadership that he has are great. There's another guy called Lenzioni who wrote a book called The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, which talks about building great teams. And I think having those sort of higher order sort of understandings about building teams and that become really important, along with the technical skills that, you know, you just talked about too, Aidan, around Smartsheets and those efficiencies. I think anything where there's a leadership focus or there's a managing of people focus, any sort of course in that area is really, really valuable. And any opportunity where you have to lead people or drive a program, all of those things matter and count. So crisis management is another, you know, the ability to deal with things going wrong. Again, that's another area that they're sort of broad skills, but I think they become important skills in working in a role like this.
Yeah, that's absolute gold. Before I start to wind it down, mate, we don't want to take up too much of your time this morning. If anybody, hopefully I'm sort of getting across most questions, but if you've got any last ones, throw them in now. Just to sort of start to wind it down, Darren, so do you genuinely think that it's a career opportunity that people could look at, especially players? You know, the benefits of staying in the game, camaraderie, travel, surely it's something that people could look forward to?
Yeah, I reckon it's the unrealised opportunity probably still in the game. And I got really excited when a couple of people in our organisation, especially all on the back of the couple of years ago when lots of things went wrong in New Zealand rugby, and they did that respect and responsibility review of the game. And we found out that in, you know, a lot of the incidents where things had gone wrong, it was just this lack of leadership. And while coaches have a brief to sort of be in charge of everything, often they don't have the skill set to cover all of those areas. And so what I've learned, again, I go back to this team-based approach where we've looked at everything in our environment as a collective group and then taken responsibility for it. So I think there's a real opportunity for management to be far more than just the guy doing the logistics. You know, you develop such a wide skill set, you know, and that's why, like, I can go and that's why that opportunity with the engineering company came up, because suddenly when I started talking to them, I realised that my skill set was wide enough to cover a whole lot of things like that. And that's just been learned on the job. That's not seeking out to be, I don't see myself as a CEO, but in a way you have that privilege of learning a whole lot more than just the technical aspects of the game. You know, you in a way you're the high performance leader alongside your S&C guy. You're working at a strategic level with the main organisation. So in my case, New Zealand Rugby. So I'm understanding all the forces that are working across the whole game because they influence us, and yet the game needs us to bring the money. And so I'm constantly fighting the battle between what the team needs from performance versus what the business needs from commercial. So all of those things are really cool. I just like the challenge of it, you know. Like, I love it when the chairman says to me, oh, we need you to play three more games because we need the money. And, you know, and I've got to go back to coach and work out how that's going to work amongst, you know, 13 test matches already. And how do I convince them that it's a good idea? And those are the cool things that they're part of, you know. And I love it when we pull off a difficult trip and our players arrive in really good nick, and because we've really thought through every little detail and that's all just gone to plan. You know, for the last 6 years, we've played seven test matches in 9 weeks and gone around the world twice, and we've won 90% of those games, you know. So those sort of things, they just drive you. People are, how do you keep going? I said, well, I just, like, every day I just feel like I'm on the edge of the seat because I know the responsibilities there, you know. Like, it's not hard because I just love the team being successful, you know. I want the team to be successful and just want to be one of the spokes in the wheel of that, you know. So,
oh, mate, I think that's a perfect note to leave it on. thank you so much for your time. Like, the learnings that everybody online and everyone who listens to the podcast later are going to hear all about your passion for the role, probably about how you've grown within it, how important planning, financial knowledge, a little bit of legal, logistical, and I suppose the key one is about being able to build those relationships and show leadership through that. That's what I've learned anyway from you today. Thank you so much for your time. Apologies if we haven't got through all questions, but it's been a huge session, actually, full of lots of information. Any last words from you, mate?
Oh, and no, just stay safe, everyone. And if you've been told to stay at home, stay at home. But no, it's really like I hopefully you see I got a passion for this. It was, you know, funny enough, like I don't really love rugby, you know, like I enjoy the game, but it's not my passion. You know, I'd rather go skiing or go for surf. But I love being the best that I can be in the role, you know, and that I want to leave a big footprint for someone to fill. And actually, I want to put someone in there that's going to do better than me. You know, that's what I want to be. The time that I've done here, and I've been so lucky. You know, I've been very lucky. I've just had the opportunity, really. So it'd be great to see, you know, a whole lot of other people put their hand up to do this. And if you've been in the environment, I think you've got to certainly a few steps ahead of where I was when I started, and be in a great position to, you know, contribute to this great game. You know,
well, I'm sure we will. You've probably inspired a fair few here today. Thanks, Darren. Thanks to everybody who's tuned in. It's been great to have such a good turnout, and everybody have a good day or evening wherever you are in the world. Cheers, mate. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on today's show. Check out PacificRugbyPlayers.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter to stay on top of all news relating to Pacific Rugby Players and to find out when we drop our next episode of PRP Radio.